From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel. A moment ago, we heard about families who are underwater on their mortgages and about the question of whether homeowners should simply walk away. Well, now, the opportunity created by the housing crisis for first-time homebuyers. The National Association of Realtors has found that nearly half of those who bought a house last year were jumping into the market for the first time. Prices are down and interest rates remain low. And then there's the $8,000 federal tax credit for first-time buyers. NPR's Jeff Brady met two of them on a tour of one Denver neighborhood.
Brian Chalmers is just back from one of the most important meetings of his life.
Hi, how are you?
All right, I'm Jeff.
Jeff, Brian.
He just signed the closing papers on a 1950 single-level brick ranch in Denver's North Park Hill neighborhood.
Welcome to Brian's new house.
That's his real estate agent, Ann Connolly. Getting to this point was not easy. Chalmers earns about $25,000 a year and saved up that much for a down payment.
It's been a five-year struggle living in very inexpensive apartments, cooking rice every day. I've gone without a cell phone for 5 years.
His new house is in pretty rough shape, but at $125,000, he can finally afford to make the jump into home ownership.
There was a time back in 2004, 2005, when people were purchasing the same kind of home for, you know, the high 100s, low 200s.
Ann Connolly says Chalmers got this house under a short sale agreement. The lenders accepted about $75,000 less for the property than they'd loaned on it to the previous owner. There are other examples of good deals like this in the neighborhood, too. Just a few blocks away, Courtney Gross and Rebecca Wolf are preparing to spend a first Christmas in their new house.
Hello.
Hi. Hey,
Jeff?
Courtney?
Yeah.
I'm Jeff.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Come on in.
They're in their late 20s, and both are social workers. They paid just over $182,000 for the house last spring. That's $28,000 less than it sold for in 2004. And, Wolf says, that was before the house was completely remodeled from the basement to a new roof.
Because the market dropped, everything kind of went under, we were able to get a house that, you know, a few years ago we wouldn't have been able to afford.
There was just one thing missing, says Gross. The windows needed updating. That's where the $8,000 federal tax credit for first-time buyers came in handy.
So then we turned around and used that tax credit to put in new windows, but then we also get a tax credit on new windows.
Their real estate agent, Vicki Porter, says a few years back, foreclosures really pushed down prices in neighborhoods like this. Now, she says, lenders are more interested in working out short sale deals before a foreclosure is underway.
So there's still some great opportunities for any buyer, but especially first-time home buyers with the tax credit.
Back over at Brian Chalmers' house, he can't wait to begin work.
Ripping up these carpets and throwing them in the trash is the top of the list. They're filthy. They're orange.
Even his agent has the remodeling bug. She wants to see the oak floors under that carpet.
Hey, what's under this blue carpet here in the hall? Did you look in?
Chalmers reaches down, grabs a corner, and rips.
We can start the demo right now.
Chalmers plans to work on his new house over the next month, then move in around February 1st. Jeff Brady, NPR News, Denver.
Unlike the Whites, many homeowners who are tens of thousands of dollars underwater have decided that it's just not worth it. NPR's Tamara Keith introduces us to a woman who is walking away from her home.
Heather Baker is done with being a homeowner. Last month, she stopped paying her mortgage.
Who says that my American dream has to be a home with a white picket fence and all of that?
But that's not what she was saying 3 years ago when she bought this four-bedroom home in a distant Washington, D.C. suburb. Baker was about to turn 40 and felt like she needed to own.
I was like, wow, you know, I need to have a home. I need to be in a home. My birthday was in September. I purchased the house in August. So I got the house before I turned 40, but it wasn't a great investment.
Not a great investment, because she figures her $465,000 house won't sell for more than $225,000 now. That's what a house down the street went for earlier this year in a foreclosure auction. Like a lot of people, Baker bought her house with no money down. The mortgage broker she worked with told her she qualified for the loan based on her credit score alone.
He was like, go get whatever house you want. Doesn't matter. And that's pretty much what I did, unfortunately.
I bet this is starting to sound familiar. Baker's experience is a classic case of the mixed-up logic that ruled the housing boom. But here's the difference. Baker is solidly upper middle class. She has a good income and can actually afford her payments.
I'm looking at the investment part of it, not just, okay, yes, I can afford this house, but I just don't see it as a good investment.
She and two daughters plan to live in this house payment-free for the next several months. Then, before her foreclosure is finalized and her lenders kick her out, she'll move into a rented townhome that's almost as big as her house. She'll pay hundreds less each month and cut her commute in half.
I hate to sound cold and uncaring and contract-breaking, but I'm really okay with it. I'm actually looking forward to moving.
This is what's known as a strategic default. She's giving up her house as a business decision, not because she has to. As we walk around her neighborhood, Baker says she feels bad for her neighbors, who bought high like she did and will be left with a foreclosed home on their block.
But I'm not the first to do it, so it happened right here in this house. Let's see, the one with the little satellite dish.
Not being the first foreclosure on the street made her decision a whole lot easier.
I hope that my neighbors would know that that had a lot of bearing on my situation.
And she isn't alone. A recent study by Experian and Oliver Wyman found that 17% of the mortgage defaults last year were strategic. John Maddox is CEO of YouWalkAway.com.
The majority of the people that call us this year, I would say, and even more so in the last few months, are people like her.
For a fee, You Walk Away guides homeowners through the foreclosure process. Baker is one of the firm's clients.
They've ran the numbers, they've done the math, and if they strategically default, they're gonna possibly have a better outcome in the end, financially.
But it's more than an economic decision, it's a contract.
Guy Sakala is the publisher of Inside Mortgage Finance.
And there's liability associated with defaulting on a loan.
He says in most states, banks can come after homeowners for the losses caused by the default, and a foreclosure is a black mark on credit reports for 7 to 10 years. Heather Baker knows all this, and she's still walking away. Tamara Keith, NPR News, Washington.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel. Merry Christmas. Housing prices are finally starting to recover, but the disaster has not let up when it comes to mortgages. Nearly one-fourth of all borrowers owe more on their mortgage than their home is now worth. That's called being underwater on your loan. And we'll be traveling through that underwater world now with the stories of two homeowners. First, here's Peter O'Dowd of member station KJZZ in Phoenix.
The story of this family might as well begin at the airport. It's a place that Milo and Lynn White have grown accustomed to. Milo lost his job at a steel construction company in the fall of 2008. He was lucky. He quickly found work at a similar company. Here's the rub, though. It was 660 miles away in Salt Lake City. So Milo had to move away from his family, and now for the last year, Lynn drives through rush hour traffic twice a month to pick up Milo from the airport so he can spend the weekend at home.
There's a lot of times I find myself on the verge of tears. It is. It's hard not having him here. Here he is. Hey, welcome home.
How are you?
There are more than 100,000 reasons why Lynn and her two teenagers cannot live with Milo. The couple's home in a Phoenix suburb is on the market for $260,000, but the Whites owe the bank $117,000 more than what the home is worth. Since August, when the house went up for sale, not a single buyer has made an offer.
We went in with our eyes open. We thought we had a home that was worth what we were paying for it. And we honestly, at one point, thought that it was going to be an investment that would help us in our retirement.
The Whites represent one of the nearly 700,000 homeowners trying to dig out from an upside-down mortgage in Arizona. According to the research firm First American CoreLogic, nearly half of the mortgages in this state are underwater. Only Nevada is worse. All this negative equity has a way of keeping families locked into homes they cannot sell. Milo White's a good example. Right now, his employer pays his rent in Salt Lake, but that stipend will end next year, and the Whites will have to carry both their mortgage and Milo's rent in Utah, something they just can't do. They're hoping to find a buyer before that happens. Otherwise, foreclosure is the only option.
We could have walked away from it like a lot of people, and we don't feel right about that.
The irony is that Lynn and Milo should be well off by now. Lynn works at the local school district, and between them, the couple makes just over six figures. But cars break down, a kid needs a tooth pulled, the dog gets sick.
So even though we have a very good income, there really is nothing left over.
By now, the retirement fund is gone, and to save pennies, the Whites have killed their TV and their home telephone. Lynn sits around the kitchen table and stirs milk into her Christmas blend coffee. She says there will be no Christmas presents this year. The children know that. One is 18, on his way to college. The other's a girl named Michele. She's a sophomore in high school, and when her parents asked if she would talk to me, Michele bolted upstairs in tears.
It's almost like she's in denial. She just won't talk about it. Anything to do with Utah, she just does not want to talk about it.
Lynn says her family is on edge.
I find myself saying, I just wish this would be over with. I can't wait till this is all behind me. This is the last year that my son will be here before he goes off to college. And you don't want to wish that away.
This lifestyle's also getting stale for Milo, who spends most nights alone in Salt Lake City. To pass the time, he writes music and plays the blues.
Too long gone, can't recall the sweetness of your mouth.
The Whites aren't looking for sympathy. They say they're lucky to have two jobs and healthy kids. Their separation would end tomorrow if someone bought the house.
You know she's never coming home.
But in 2 days, Milo will leave again. He and Lynn will rise before dawn, drive to the airport in a broken car, and part for 2 weeks with another kiss goodbye. For NPR News, I'm Peter O'Dowd.
To walk away or not to walk away? As we've heard, that's a question that Heather Baker and Milo and Lynn White have answered very differently. Well, now for some surprising expert advice from Professor Brent White, who teaches law at the University of Arizona. Welcome to the program, Professor White.
Hi, thank you. Thank you.
Now, your paper on this subject is called Underwater and Not Walking Away, Fear, Shame, and the Social Management of the Housing Crisis. I gather you're saying people should overcome their fear and shame and be prepared to walk away, if that makes sense.
Well, I think I should be clear in the first instance that I wrote an academic paper and not an advice column, so I don't actually advise homeowners to do anything. Rather, I simply make an observation that I think has resonated with a lot of people, particularly a lot of underwater homeowners. And that observation is that many of the 15 million American homeowners who are underwater on their mortgages would be better off financially if they let go of their bad investments, just like a bank or a corporation would do. A perfect example of this is Morgan Stanley, which walked away from 5 properties in San Francisco just this month. They essentially just gave the properties back to the bank. The properties had lost 50% of their value, tenants were hard to come by, and Morgan Stanley made a business decision that it would make sense to walk away from the properties. So the question I ask in my article is that if a bank and corporations can walk away from a mortgage, why shouldn't Joe homeowner be able to walk away from their mortgage?
But here's what, as we heard, Milo White told reporter Peter O'Dowd about walking away from his home. He said, we don't feel right about that. We've communicated with the bank at every turn. He's talking about feelings that a corporation doesn't possess. What do we do with those misgivings about not being true to our word?
You know, I wouldn't say that they're misgivings. I think that these are deeply held values that many Americans share, a sense of moral obligation to pay our debts. A contract is a legal document. It's not an ethical statement. And a contract contains, particularly a mortgage contract in a non-recourse state like the White's mortgage in Arizona, there's a contractual option to default.
Now, you've raised the phrase a non-recourse state. You're saying that in some states, if you still owe, say, $120,000 on a mortgage after the property has been sold and the proceeds go to the bank, they don't come after you for the balance of the loan?
That's right. In some states, they're barred from pursuing you for what's called a deficiency judgment, and Arizona would be one of those states. And so that means that the contract, the agreement between the lender and their borrower by law in a non-recourse state is that if the homeowner defaults, the bank gets the house.
How do people know if they're in a recourse state or a non-recourse state?
Well, the best way they can find out is probably to consult with an attorney, a knowledgeable attorney within their state. The unfortunate thing for underwater homeowners is there is a lot of misinformation out there. And if they were to go to, for example, a HUD-approved housing counseling agency, they would probably not be given advice or good information about whether they could walk away, when it might make sense to do so, because the policy of the federal government is to try to prevent foreclosure and to get people to make their payments. And if you go on the internet, there's also tons of misinformation out there intended to scare and shame homeowners into staying in their homes. So it's difficult to find good information, and it's likely going to require someone to seek it out from a knowledgeable attorney.
Professor Brent White of the University of Arizona. Professor White, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.